We begin tonight the final perek of the Shmona Prakim, the climax, which is going to focus on the question of Bechir Chafshus, and the question of the scope and the limits of free will. And although we're going to be studying Rambam, I actually want to get started with a quote from Tosfos and Rashba that came across just this morning. This year, Yeshiva's learning Bava Kama. And there's an intriguing Gemara, Peheim and Alf, Peheim and Beis, which is in a halachic context, and it's a drasha from a pasuk, and the Gemara derives a what seems like a halachic principle. And Tosis and the Rashba look at it and are analyzing it, sort of using halachic tools. Then you turn around and you realize we're using halachic tools to, but the content is hashkafa. And the content actually has a lot to do with the scope and limits of Bechira. So I want to open with that, just sort of get our minds ticking, and then we'll turn our attention to the Rambam, start from the beginning. The eighth parak of Bava Kama is concerned with the halachas of when people injure one another, personal injury. Unlike a case of Adam HaMazik, where a person damages property, where you pay for depreciation, and that alone, and not for any collateral damage. If you have a case of Adam HaChovel, where someone actually attacks another person's body, then the Mishnah quotes based on Psukim, you have to pay not only for the damage that you did to the other person, permanent damage you may have inflicted on the other person's person, but also several other incidental costs, one of which is medical bills. As a chiyuv of ripui. That's based on Psukim and Chumash. Chumash and Parashat Mishpatim talks about two people getting into a fight. Rag shiv to yitain v'rapo yirpay. You got to pay shevas, you have to compensate him for lost wages while he was recuperating from the whoop, from the injury. And v'rapo yirpay, and you got to reimburse him for his medical expenses. Now the Gemara says, near the bottom of Pehei Amid Alf Maseches Bava Kama, and the Gemara returns to again Pehei Amid Beis. Gemara said, it could have just said, Rak Shiv To Yitain, V'yirapeh. You have to give Shevis, V'yirapeh, you have to heal him. And I would know that there's a Chiyuv, a Ripui, the Chiyuv to cover medical expenses. What's with the doubled verb, V'rapo Yirapeh? Pasuk doesn't say, Shiv To Nason Titain, it says Shiv To Yitain, a single verb. So what's added with the rapo yirapeh instead of merely yirapeh? So the Gemara says, well, mikan shenitna rishus l'rofeh l'rapos. So here you see that a doctor was given permission, authorization to heal. And apparently I would have thought that's forbidden to practice medicine. And that's the pasuk comes to tell me, no, rapo yirapeh, you're allowed to practice medicine. Which already gets you wondering, well, why would I have assumed that you can't? Why does that require, why is that a chiddush, that it's mutter to practice medicine? And Gemara didn't even say there's a mitzvah l'rapo. Gemara said, from here you see there's rishus l'rapo, that there's authorization, there's license. I would have thought it's aser. And presumably it has something to do with this question of bechira and of Kadosh Baruch Hu imposing his will, and the question of intervention. Bitach sounds like it's perhaps an issue of bitach and hishtadlus. I would have thought, how could I heal? I should leave in the hands of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's a lack of bitachon. One would have thought. And that's what the pasuk tells you. No, that's incorrect. You're allowed to, it's appropriate to seek medical attention. Okay, that's a simple reading of the Gemara. Tosfos and the Rashba both say, one second. Why do you need an added drasha, an added word to indicate that sort of license? Tosfos says, if the Torah says you cover medical bills, the obvious implication is that you're allowed to seek medical treatment. You don't need an added drasha. Just say, Rakshiv Toyitain V'yirapeh, and you have to cover his medical expenses. Obviously, medical expenses are legitimate. What's added? The Tosfos and the Rashba both answer more or less identically. The language is a little different. They say, nah. See, of course, if the Torah would have said yirapeh, it means you're allowed to seek medical advice in the sort of situation that the Chumash is describing, which is Reuven and Shimon get into a bar fight and they injure each other. So if there's an injury that's inflicted by another person, so the Rishonim say, oh, there, I understand, you can seek medical advice. But what I would have thought is, maybe only in that sort of situation you can seek medical intervention. If it was inflicted by other, injuries inflicted by other human beings, then you can reach out to a human to cure the problem. What I would have thought, though, incorrectly, is that in a situation where I become sick through natural means, no human intervened, I just got sick, I would have thought that in that case it's inappropriate to seek medical intervention because you're being so ser gzeira shamayim. You're trying to undo what HaKadosh Baruch Hu's decree. I would have thought that's inappropriate. Kamash Malan, that too is appropriate. That's what the Rishonim write. Now that really gets us thinking about a lot. The fact that you would have thought to distinguish. Isn't that intriguing? I would have thought it's appropriate to intervene to cure injury done by another person. But I would have thought it's inappropriate to cure injury done by a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Almost as though, like, you would think there are like two different levels. Because human beings have Bechir Chavshus, and on that level I can respond. That's not Gzeira Shamayim? It's a fascinating Havamina. And then, part of the question you have to ask yourself is, what was the Maskana? I would have differentiated between responding to what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does directly versus to what people do. And the Pasuk says, no, you can heal in both cases. Why? Because there is no such distinction? There is such a distinction, but for some other reason, you know, it's still appropriate hishtadlus. Are we distinguishing between what people choose to do versus what HaKadosh Baruch Hu does without human choice? So it's a sort of a fascinating, that's what I was saying before. The content is hashkafic, but the tools and structure are halachic. Very fat. Like, you usually don't think about that question of what's the kamash malon, what changed from havmi to maskana. You usually don't use those categories of thought in addressing questions of machshava. But here it really is. Tosis and Rashba are getting at sort of this, a lot of what the Rambam is going to be thinking with us about over the course of the 8th parak. So what are the scope, the limits of Bechir Chafshis. What does it mean that people have free will? HaKadosh Baruch Hu controls the universe, and he chose to give us free will. So how do you make sense of that? And Tosfos and Rashba are sticking into the psukim, because again, the Gemara started. The Gemara understands that this halachic pasuk is teaching you what appears to be a godic concept, a hashkafic concept, Rishus L'Rav for the Rapos. Again, that too is at the nexus, the border of halacha and hashkafa. It's a machshava issue, but with halachic implications. Are you permitted? And the questions of bitachon and shtadlus are applied hashkafa, applied machshava. Can I or can't I? Is it wrong to do this? Would act in this way, is that a violation of our emunah? That's sort of fascinating. So the Bechira Hishtadlus question, and then perhaps more deeply, the question of the Bitachon Hishtadlus question, and then perhaps even more deeply, the question of how you make sense of Bechira Chavshus. What does it mean that Kadosh Baruch Hu has plans and that people are doing things, and how do those interact? And are there two tracks here? Somehow Kadosh Baruch Hu is running things at different levels. So that's what we need to sort of open. I thought this is just, and this came up this morning. This came up this morning, morning Seder. Touching a drop in shiur, probably going to talk about more in the next shiur. We just began the sugya of Adam HaMazik in the end of the second paragraph of Bava Kamma. In order to appreciate the Mishnah there in the beginning of the Gemara, it was necessary to look at Adam HaChovel. That was the beginning of the 8th paragraph, and that already opened up a lot of fascinating issues. Fascinating halachic issues, and then this intriguing hashkafic issue. Again, a hashkafic content that's presented and dealt with through structure and tools of halachic categories of thought. So now that we have a lot sizzling on the table, let's begin to see how the Rambam addresses it. Now, the Rambam enters into the world of Bechir Chavshus through the topic, the theme that's been the organizing axis of Shmona Prakim. After all, let's not forget, he's ranged broadly in Shmona Prakim, but ultimately it's meant to be a Hakdama to Mesachas Avos. not to be hakdama to Perek Yavas. And therefore, really, it's fundamental. The fundamental axis of this whole Shemona Prakim is a question of midos. And we've gone many places with midos. We've spoken about the fact that people have different parts of a nefesh and have midos, and that we have the ability, and that there are better and worse places for one's midos to be, and how I can go about adjusting and adapting them. And most recently, we saw in the seventh parak, he spoke about the implication, the consequences of good and bad midos, how that impacts, not only is it a mitzvah in and of itself, to polish and cultivate properly balanced midos, but it impacts my avos Hashem as a whole. Bad midos will be a mechitzah between me and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and good midos will propel the relationship forward. And remember, we had seen in the last parak, he had taken it to the extreme. Even when I'm at the highest levels of avos Hashem, I'm striving for nevuah, good and bad midos will either help move the process forward, or it'll be mechitzos that retard that process of growth. And now, Tosfos and Rashba, right? Well, they want to know. They answer some questions, but leave other questions tantalizingly open. They're clearly dealing with it, but they don't address it directly. They just say, "Well, the reason why we need a pasuk, the reason why they need that extra word is because I would have otherwise thought that I have the right to cure humanly imposed problems, but not to cure divinely imposed problems." Well, so the Havamina is clearly assuming some fundamental distinction, which requires understanding. And then the question also is that distinction last lamaskana, or is the whole point of the pasuk that we reject that distinction?
There's no answer there, you're saying.
They say kamash malan, that it is mutter. But the question is, as always, whenever you have a kamash malan, hey, what's the movement from the Havamina to maskana? Of all the premises the Havamina is built on, which one changed? So that's... here, particularly striking. Okay, so now the Rambam is going to enter in the eighth parak, which is going to be devoted primarily to Bechir Chafshes. The Rambam is going to enter into the world of Bechir Chafshes through the avenue of thinking about Bechir Chafshes and Midos. That's yet another dimension of thinking about Midos. Lo Yitachen, here we are at the very beginning of Parak Shemini. Lo Yitachen Sheyia HaAdam Bateva. People are not born with good midos or bad midos. Just like you're not born a competent carpenter. No one is born a capable locksmith or a capable accountant. Aval yitachen she. Bateva muchan al maila o prisos. What's true with profession, with career, and with midos, I won't be born with a particular career. I won't be born with particular training, but I might be born with an aptitude for it. Some people might be born with a head that lends itself to accounting work, and others will be born with a head that does not lend itself to accounting work, and that's going to be true. That where you might have predilections, you might have aptitudes, that could be true for midos as well. I might have be born with a teva mukhara maila oprisos. I might be born with a nature, the predisposition, with a temperament that lends itself to certain strength or weakness. Bishiyu pu'ulos zo kalos alav mi pu'ulos zulasa. The actions that... the raft of actions that go along with their particular strength or weakness, particular good or bad mida, those actions might be easy. Actions of this might be easier for me than the actions of that. Mishalze. Here's an example. Now the Rambam is going to the terminology he uses is medieval medical terminology of different biles, but we could translate it into our own terminology. Mishalze shia adam shib, but the concept remains the same. Adam shemizgo note el hayovish, someone whose nature tends towards dryness. V'yeh etzem mocho zach, Ma'at halechios. I don't even know how to translate this properly. Certainly not how to transpose it into our terminology. But here's a person who tends towards less internal moisture. Again, in the terminology of medieval medicine.
Dehydrated?
Not exactly. A dry brain, so to speak. Hine zeye kalu alav hazechira v'avonas anyanim yoser me'asher al ish balech levana. The person with the, so to speak, drier bile will have an easier time remembering things and understanding things than someone with a lot of white bile, which is apparently associated. Rav Halech Ismach. He has a lot associated with a lot of moisture in the brain. Some people have a naturally, we wouldn't say attribute the source of the causality to your bile levels. But we would say, we give a different ideology to it, we certainly would say, look, there are people who have a natural quickness of mind, an ease of memory, who can understand things quickly. Other people, it takes more time. So, okay, so it's certainly true. You're looking at Reuven and Shimon. Reuven has an easier time remembering things than Shimon. Reuven has an easier time understanding things than Shimon. Aval, even if Reuven has these natural tendencies and natural capacity, he might have the capacity, greater capacity. But Yunacho Soha Mucham de Mizgol Zos Hamali, take Reuven, who has a greater capacity for this. Mibli Limud Klal, but he's left untaught. Not inspired, no force acts upon him, no education is provided to him. So it's lovely that he has all this capacity. With all the capacity in the world, if he never encounters education and no force ever moves him to develop himself, he has lots of capacity, he'll remain unused, he will remain uneducated, he'll remain a sachal. And the reverse is true as well. Here you have Shimon, doesn't have as much natural capacity. It's not as easy for him to remember. It's not as easy for him to learn. But if he's taught and taught well, he can come to know, he can come to understand. It may take him more work to get there. But everyone's born with, the point is, yes, everyone's born with aptitudes. But that doesn't complete the story. Al zeha ofen biatzmo yia isha mezeg libo yosar cham min aroy maat. Here is someone whose heart is a bit warmer. In other words, again, that's medieval medical terminology for saying he has a particular temperament. He has a natural predilection for to be more courageous, to be more of a risk taker, perhaps. Yia gibor. He'll be a gibor, meaning he has a natural capacity for greater courage. So if he takes that on and practices it, he can easily become a courageous person. Whereas someone else, who's colder, so to speak, he would naturally tend towards more fearfulness. What does that mean? If he acts that way, it'll kick in more quickly. For the second fellow, acting in a fearful way will transform him into a fearful person more rapidly than the first. The first one, acting courageously, will transform him into a courageous person more quickly than the second. So yes, you and I may have different predilections, different natural tendencies, but that doesn't lock me in that I must have a particular midah. It means that if I have a greater tendency towards that, a little bit of I'll become more habituated to that more quickly. The second fellow who has natural capacity, natural tendency to fearfulness. So yes, if he acts fearful a few times, the midah will really sink in, and it'll be difficult to remove. Into chuvan bo hagvura, if he chooses to act in a powerful, courageous way. Because she a giber, it'll be difficult for him to grow into be a giber. But avol yihem yurga blo safik. But certainly, if he practices enough, it'll sink in. The first point Rambam is making is that there is bechir chavshus in terms of armidos. It may be more difficult for one than for the other. Some people are better communicators than others. As a general tendency, statistically speaking, women tend to be better communicators than men, although there are certainly plenty of exceptions in both directions. There are men who are great communicators, there are women who are not capable communicators. But whatever it is, certainly there are people who are better communicators and people who are not. That doesn't mean, though, you know, I have this conversation often with young men who are dating. The fact that you don't think you have a natural tendency to be a good communicator, that's not onus rachmana patre. It's not like, well, I can't. I'm a guy, so I can't. It might be true. Number one, some guys are naturally great communicators. If you happen to be, if you happen to fit the stats well, that means it doesn't come as naturally. It doesn't mean it can't be cultivated. As Robin just said here, it'll take more work. It can be cultivated. If I naturally have a temper that flares, it doesn't mean I can't train myself to react more calmly, more rationally, to slow down my natural, hot temper reaction. I could. It'll be tough. That'll be tough for me. Maybe for you, if you're a calmer person naturally, so it'll be easier for you to react in a calmer way. Maybe you have a different me that you struggle with. The Rama's point is, there is Bechir Chavshus. The fact that we have natural tendencies doesn't mean we must be that way. We could train ourselves otherwise, but for natural tendency means to pick up this Mida, to cultivate this Mida will be easier for you than for me. The truth is, this in many ways reflects what the Rama discussed in the sixth parak, which may, to an extent, explain its place. Remember, in the sixth parak, he spoke about the difference between having a desire to act in a certain way versus actually acting a certain way. And everyone has Yitzhar Hara, lots of Yitzhar Hara. There's nothing wrong with having it. Yitzhar Hara, the question is, do I act on it? Do I not act on it? And what do I do with it? And we discussed at the time. Different people have different Yitzhar Hara. What's easier for me is more difficult for you, and vice versa. The fact that I have Yitzhar Hara neither makes me an evil person nor lets me off the hook. That's my Yitzhar Hara. This is a challenge for me. I haven't done it just because I'm challenged doesn't make me a bad person. I could be a hero if I overcome it. If I overcome it, that's amazing, and that's the right thing to do. But the fact that I am tempted to do the wrong thing doesn't make me bad. On the other hand, it also doesn't absolve me. I can't say, well, I wanted to, so I had no choice. No, okay, you want to do the wrong thing, so that means now's the time to step up to the plate and push back and be misgaber over the Yetzer Hara. There is Bechira Chavshus. There are natural Yitzhar Hara, different people with different tendencies. For different people, each person has his own profile of what's easier and what's harder. But that doesn't absolve me. That's the roadmap for what, that's the list of what needs to be done. It's exactly, and now he's really taking that on directly. The question of Bechir Chavshus. Yes, there are tendencies, but tendency doesn't mean that I must act this way. I have Bechir Chavshus. For me, this will be a more difficult sign than for you. And for you, that would be a more difficult insight than it is for me.
Would you agree that, just to go a next step within this, that let's say you get two people who have exactly the same difficulty being courageous, let's say. Right? Yeah. They're naturally more wimpy. And they have a difficulty being courageous. They're exactly, let's say, two people exactly the same. Even at that level, the one of them could find it more difficult to put in the power to do it than the other one. In other words, even that, let's say two people exactly the same in terms of their natural tendency to be a certain way, but then the work on it can also be if they're different.
Right, because some people may have a natural tendency to work.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Some people procrastinate naturally, or so even that. So
correct.
When you talk about the Yetzer Hara and you're not resolving everything, but only Hashem really knows the bottom end of the line, how hard you worked, how hard you tried. It's not about where you get to necessarily. Yeah, we're not absolved. But we don't know what our potential is, whether we're able to get over this and beat the Yetzer Hara, or whether, actually, given what we've been given, as long as we worked the hardest we could, we didn't get over it. Only Hashem knows at the end of the line. As we have to think, would you agree that we have to think we're not absolved? We have to become top midos and everything, and we have to overcome every yitzhar. But end of the line, if a person, you know, everyone has different measures of how, which yitzhar is stronger for them, or which ones are weaker, or which, you know, and therefore, I don't know, let's say in laziness, let's say a person at the end of the line, at the end of his life, and he goes to China, he didn't overcome his yitzhar of laziness completely. But we don't know. But Hashem could judge him higher, better than a person who was found it. In other words, this.
No, from Tzara Agra.
In other words, even though we have mitzvahs, I'll be taking it stronger. Even though we have mitzvahs and we know we all have to do the mitzvahs, however hard we find it, but we have to do the mitzvahs. Is it possible? I'm asking. Is it possible that at the end of the line, Hashem really takes the effort into?
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's not about did you do. It's not about a. You know, it's about the effort and the yigia and the shtadlus. That's what it's all about, really.
Absolutely. The Rama writes, I think it's in the, in Hilchos Tshuva, near the beginning, I believe the third parak of Hilchos Tshuva, maybe it's in the second parak. The Rama says, look, we're not privy to the full formula that HaKadosh Baruch Hu uses in a way in assessing each person's actions, which is what the Navi Yishayahu tells us every Tanas Sibur, coming up Mirtz Hashem in 2 weeks. Elam Achshav Asay Machshav Sechem Lo Derechem Drachay. Kasher Gavu Shemayim Eretz. Kadosh Baruch Hu is a totally different perspective. Looking across the street versus looking down at the street from outer space. Two totally different perspectives. So Yeshayahu says that's a metaphor for the radically different perspective that we and Hakadosh Baruch Hu have in the universe. So we would expect that it stands to reason that finite creatures couldn't have the full perspective that an infinite creator has. That's certainly true.
Is the measure, right.
So the Rambam says we're not fully privy. We have some sense from logic or from Masorah and certainly from Nevuah and Tanakh. There's some sense of some of the principles that Kadosh Baruch Hu uses in assessing. And evaluating, we don't have the full picture. That one of the rules we do know about is the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, L'fum Tzar Agra. Another Mishnah that's relevant is, I believe it's Rabbi Tarfon, I think it's the end of the second parak of Pirkei Avos. It says, "Lo alacha malacha ligmar v'yata rashay li batal himano." That's very, very important. We shouldn't expect necessarily to finish all the work, while at the same time, that's not reason to say, I won't even try. Why? It's a good point. It would have been a good argument. I'm not going to get the job done, so why bother? And the answer presumably is because it's quantized. In other words, it's not binary. It's not binary in the sense that it's not that if I didn't finish it, then I did nothing. Every chunk accomplished is accomplishment. So I'm going to, I think it was Emerson who said, he hit your wagon to a star. You're going to set your sights very, very high. If I set my sights very, very high, so now I have a sense of, over a course of a lifetime, I would love to grow into that sort of person. And that way, step by step by step, year by year, month by month, day by day, I have a sense of where I'm driving at. And I have a sense of what direction I'm shooting for. I mean, I'm going to move over the course of time that direction in little steps day by day. That's definitely true. And so the Rambam says, and here we are, so let's wrap up where we are for now. So the Rambam has now introduced us front and center through the avenue, as I said before, through the avenue of analyzing midos and sort of taking our analysis and our thinking about midos to the next step, introducing the concept of Bechir Chafshis. And you're saying, in midos, as with other aspects of Os Hashem, is going to be, Bechir Chafshis is going to play an important role. We don't assume that Kadosh Baruch Hu locked us in. Every person will have his or her own tendencies, but that then lays out what's going to be easy. Where will it be easier for me to succeed, and where will it be more difficult?
It's even stronger than that. I'd say that the whole purpose of us being in this world, as opposed to be going straight into Olam Haba, was, you know, that it's really built into the whole Bria. We have to have some kind of cure.
Right. That's part of the significance of the phrase, Lo Nitzotar Malachi Asharis. that Kadosh Baruch Hu didn't give the Torah to Malachim, gave it to us. And the Gemara will sometimes reference that terminology in speaking about, you know, human weakness is human limitations. And you can't make unreasonable, halacha does not make unreasonable, unattainable demands of a human being. So it occurred to me recently, it's not merely saying like a concession. Look, we're human, so what can we do? When the Torah Malachi Hasharis is probably a reference, but we'll close with this, to the Agada in Masechah Shabbos about how Moshe Rabbeinu debates with the Malachim and demonstrates to them the Torah was meant specifically to be clinical in Olam Hazeh. Malachim couldn't keep mitzvahs in Olam HaElyon. It doesn't work. They're all phrased in physical fashion. So it's not a concession. By design, HaKadosh Baruch Hu crafted the Torah to be carry on in a physical human context. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't chose not to give the Torah Malachim. He chose to give it to us with our limitations and with our frailties. Now he goes on to say, we'll take a look at next time, he's attacking the Karaites, probably, and others who downplayed or entirely cut out the whole notion of Bechir Chavshis, and going to talk about how that's illogical and flies in the face of the whole concept of halacha, the whole concept of mitzvos. But then he's going to begin to talk along the lines of how we began. Well, now let's sort of, once we accept the concept of Bechir Chavshis, now we have to figure out, well, how's it really, how do you unpack it? So that's the Mirtz Hashem coming attractions.